Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Joseph Emmett. He is author of Buddha's Book of Meditation, Mindfulness Practices for a Quieter Mind. Mindfulness meditation is an increasing popular form of an ancient and powerful technique for reducing stress, elevating one's mental state, and improving the practitioner's overall quality of life. Award-winning author and mindful meditation teacher Joseph Emmett now takes you down a step-by-step path to integrate this potent form of meditation into your daily life. Joseph holds a doctorate in music from Boston University. He has been certified in reality therapy counseling with Dr. William Glasser and has been a Fulbright scholar and a longtime Tai Chi practitioner. You can find out more about Joseph and his books and other programs by visiting his website, which is www.mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org. And center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E. So it's mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Joseph to the show. Good day, sir.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'm doing very well. You know, I listened to some of your guided meditations today, so I'm doing quite well.
Great. You know, we have something in common because you mentioned bringing inspiration to Earth, and this whole tradition that I'm involved in talks about applied mindfulness. And, you know, unless it's applied, it is not brought down to Earth in some kind of a way. And I'm really happy to see that there is a common thread there.
Yes, we do. I'm a very practical person, and I love being able to take these things and apply them, because I figure we're here to live this life, so why not use everything to make it better?
Right, and including meditation.
Including meditation. So, well, you know, what I would like to do is first of all talk a little bit about your experience in meditation and just a few other things about it, then go into looking at some of the specific areas in your book, and then we'd like to finish up talking about your center and some of the other additional things you offer. So first of all, would you mind letting the audience know a little bit about kind of what led up to this book and your experience with your mentor, Thich Nhat Hanh?
Right, you win. Yes, his name is challenging for some people to pronounce.
Well, you know, if you're not used to it. If you're not used to it, it can be a challenge.
Well, he's a Vietnamese. That's what perhaps makes it an unusual name for many of us. I dabbled in meditation like many other people, yoga and meditation and Indian spirituality, on and off, like from my early 20s. But it wasn't anything like very important in my life, or I wasn't doing it very well either. Until I met Thich Nhat Hanh. I met him in Montreal once, and then I went to visit him in Plum Village in France, where he lives. And I went and actually interviewed some of the residents there. I asked them, "What do you do when you sit down to meditate?" it was sort of like a spiritual voyeur, if you like, realized that I was getting the same story from many from all the people that I was asking about. And that was the basis of what is sometimes called insight meditation or Vipassana meditation or the two stages of Buddhist meditation, if you like, in the Buddhist tradition, which is one, calming the mind, and secondly, opening yourself up to insight and to inspiration. And I have been very, very blessed to have that path, and I was very happy when Thich Nhat Hanh appointed me a Dharma teacher, a share in his lineage, and I've been offering these courses ever since. And this book is sort of like the fruit of my years of teaching groups and individuals, and what I learned from them, and what I learned and how best to put this forward. And it's been quite an adventure.
I bet. Well, I noticed that your Dharma name is Dwelling in Peaceful Concentration. That's just saying it.
Yes. Peaceful concentration, dwelling in peaceful concentration. It's a very nice image. Actually, it's a bit of like the image of the Buddha we see in his pictures or in his little statuettes, you know. He is sitting, dwelling in peaceful concentration. I think there is a connection there between concentration and being peaceful. Because if you lose your concentration, you can easily get there are all kinds of pressures in life. We are always pulled and pushed by, you know, our children, our partners, our bosses at work, clients, whatever. And it takes a certain amount of concentration to stay balanced. It's sort of like a dynamic balance, you know. But, I think it's a very good image, peaceful concentration.
Yeah, I agree with you. The number of distractions that we have in our daily lives, I mean, it just seems to only increase every day. And it can sometimes, really take people off track, I mean, I don't know how many times people have told me, where has the day gone? What have I done? You know what I mean? These kinds of things that it just seems like, life runs them rather than them running life, guiding their life.
Yes. The day just got away from me. I just heard this was a new way of putting it, and I just heard it a few days ago from someone I was trying to get an appointment with.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned mindfulness, and if you wouldn't mind, some of our listeners may not understand, exactly what mindfulness is. So, would you mind sharing what that is?
Well, there are many ways of going about describing mindfulness. One way is paying attention intentionally, which sort of brings up the distinction between automatic thinking on the one hand and purposive thinking. Like, for example, if you're a lawyer, you're thinking about a certain case and you intend to do it, and you charge your client for every minute. That's purposive thinking. And the other kind of automatic thinking is thinking that just happens to you. It sort of comes over you, and especially if you have a psychological challenge like anxiety, that can really make you miserable because the automatic thoughts that come to you are not always happy ones,
Mm-hmm.
So One way of talking about mindfulness is to say it's paying attention intentionally instead of like to the distractions like you mentioned or instead of the negative things that come up. Paying attention to the positive things, like right now today has been the most beautiful day of the season so far. Beautiful, sunny, warm day. And but the blue sky is always there. It's always there. But sometimes we pay attention to the negative things because we all have this negativity bias. And so mindfulness, perhaps we could concentrate on this one description for the time being, is paying attention purposefully to what's beautiful, what's good, what's beneficial, what's making us happy right now.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned the negativity bias of the brain, and when I was reading that chapter, I had to take pause with that because, you know, you mentioned how the brain, you know, just focuses, and you can also maybe even exaggerate, you know, some of that negativity, and we tend to remember that, and I, you know, when I look at the news, you know, and it's highly, highly negative, except for maybe one last closing, you know, feel-good story, you know, but it's very much, yeah, you know, in the negative. And, you know, and it made me wonder if, you know, that bias is maybe what drives some of the media, you know, attention, you know, to try to be remembered.
Oh, yes. The media know their business. You know, they're putting that out because it gets viewers, it gets attention, it gets audience, and yeah, they know what they're doing very well. They know that bad news is good news for them, anyway.
Yeah, that's why I don't mind too much. But you know, it was just, you know, that was one of those, you know, as I was going through and reading your book, that was one of those aha moments I got, you know, that it kind of put certain things into perspective that, you know, maybe I hadn't, well, not maybe, things of this I had not thought of previously. So that's what I love when a book is good that can make me think and maybe even, you know, give me a different perspective from when I started. So that was really good. There were a couple quotes in your book that kind of relate to the same type of thing, and I wanted to mention both of them and get your, you know, reading on them. And one of them, it was from your mentor, and he indicated, it was a quote in one of the beginning chapters, and it said, "There is no enlightenment outside of daily life." And then there was a line of yours that indicated, "There is no line that separates meditation from everyday life, or everyday life from meditation." So, and you know, quite often, you know, when we think of meditation, people, you know, set aside that special time, you know, outside of, you know, everyday life. So would you mind kind of talking a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, when I was with Thich Nhat Hanh one session, somebody asked him, how long should one meditate each day? What's your prescription? Like, how long should the daily meditation last? And he said, all day. that wasn't what the questioner had in mind, I'm sure. But what he means is to stay. What for Thich Nhat Hanh, meditation means being here and now, being in the present moment, being present. If you are with your children, be 100% present to your children. There's nothing sadder than a child trying to tell us something that happened today that, you know, upset her, and her parents fingering their iPhones, you know? So, for Thich Nhat Hanh, meditation means being present, being here, for your lover, for your partner, for your client, whoever it is. So in that sense, when you put it in that perspective, then you can see what he means, that there's no separation between meditation and everyday life. So this being present to yourself above all, because many of us are, our focus is outside. We're always, you know, thinking of what other people are doing wrong or what's happening out there instead of what's happening inside. So being present also means being present to yourself. Like so many times somebody will say to someone, why are you so angry? And the person will say, I'm not angry. And everybody in the room can see that he's angry except him. His focus is outside. His focus is not inside. He's not present to himself. So you can think of those quotes in those terms.
Okay. Well, and I understand that, you know, and I think for me that, I mean, that makes the idea of meditation much easier to apply, you know, the idea of just kind of being in that present state and, you know, not living in the past or in the future even, you know, to really kind of,
yes.
Yeah, because there's so much that can be missed when you're in, you know, not here right now. So, now, in your book, one of the things I also enjoy in your book is that, you know, you give very practical applications, like we were talking about applications, in the form of either guided meditation or meditation theme or song, practice songs. And I honestly, in 5 years I have done this show, have not had a guest who had song as an application to some of their ideas and practices. So you're a first for that. Would you mind kind of talking
yeah.
about exactly, you know, the idea of these, first of all, you know, the differences between the guided meditations, the themes, and songs?
Well, I like to have a song in my heart all day. And it's usually a song I have written. You know, there are songs like, not just my songs, but the song, perhaps, you know, What a Wonderful World.
Mm-hmm.
Louis Armstrong has a beautiful version of it. Or Three Little Birds by Bob Marley. These are songs that are unbelievably positive. And if I had access to a research lab, I would like to research, like, if someone is depressed, can they listen to these two songs all day long for a week and remain depressed? It's a very interesting question in my mind. But anyway, for me, music is like mantras, words, short phrases that sort of become an earworm and keep repeating itself in your mind. And we all do that all the time. You go to the movie and you come out and you're whistling or humming the love theme, you know. It has become an earworm. And it mimics concentration. Like, you don't say to yourself, I must remember this tune, I must hum it. Oh, it just happens. And so the wonderful thing about music is that it's effortlessly puts you in the right frame of mind, in the right frame of positivity. And my songs are all songs of positivity. And like when you look at or Google meditation music, you'll have instrumental music, you know, new age kind of music with probably on the cover you'll have a sunrise or the ocean or something. But this is not what I mean by meditation music. Meditation music, it, for me, is short phrases like, with each breath I come back to an island of peace in my heart. This is one. Another one, just breathe, just breathe. Everything will be all right. These are the words to the song. Just breathe. Everything will be all right. Now that song has accompanied me to root canal work, to knee surgery, and it has accompanied people in my groups to radiation therapy. Just breathe. Just breathe. Everything will be all right. Now those words you might forget, but when they're attached to a melody, the melody sticks in your ear. Melodies are sticky, and it helps you. It helps you practice. It helps you remember.
Yeah, and the beauty of that is that you can really apply it to any kind of music. So, I mean, if your music inclination is pop, or classical, or hip-hop, you know, that you can go ahead and, you know, you can kind of put these words into a musical background that you find attractive, you know, that makes it memorable for you.
Well, a little while ago, there was a book called The Mozart Effect. I wonder if you remember that book. It was all over the place for a while, and I think it was sort of, in effect, saying what you just said. However, my approach is like mantras, like a short phrase that's attached to a melody, and the melody is sort of burrows your way into your brain and brings the words along. So, that's more like my understanding of.
Okay. Well, you know, I was listening to it. As a matter of fact, when you mentioned It's a Wonderful World, the Louis Armstrong, I have that one on my iPhone, and I'm a nature lover.
You do?
And
nice.
I go on my little nature walk every morning, and I have a little playlist of inspirational songs, you know, and, that's one of them.
I just wish everybody did that, you know? I just wish everybody did that.
Yeah. Well, it was very interesting. This was one of those things, Joseph, that I kind of kept to myself. You know, I did it, and I also love photography, nature photography, so I would take pictures and never shared it on my, you know, quote, professional, you know, social media site, you know, because I just thought that was, mm-hmm. you know, like, who would want to know this, you know? I mean, I did, but once I started sharing it on the professional side, it's, you know, people, you know, have since started doing that themselves. So I love, you know, that fact that it was, in a sense, a little contagious, you know, that, you know, it reminds people every morning, you know, just go out in nature, you know, enjoy the sun, the stars, the, you know, or the sky, the flowers, you know, especially in spring, you know, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And there's a flip side to that, Robert. There are songs with toxic words, like from the old days, "You Belong to Me." I mean, it's an attitude to avoid, you know. I mean, try saying that to your partner.
Yeah, depending on the partner, but generally speaking, that wouldn't be well received.
Yeah. I mean, so the melody makes these words part of your psyche, you know, and I scrupulously, sometimes I adore a melody and I'm, you know, caught, and I'll instantly Google all the words, and I'll check the words, and if the words are not nourishing, that song is not going on my iPod. You know?
Yeah. Well, I do know that. Yeah. There have been many times that I've done that myself. And a lot of times it would be, you know, after I maybe had a series of uplifting songs, and then I'll get one that all of a sudden, you know, it strikes me that the message was like, wait a minute, you know, this is not what I want to hear on my morning walk, you know. And
exactly,
of course, that was eliminated. Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, not all musicians are happy people. And they express their own unhappiness and their own sometimes depression, whatever, in their music and in their words. And if we're not careful, this is called mood contagion. If we're not careful, we're absorbing that. And there's so much of that stuff, it's unbelievable on the radio. Perhaps this is the negativity bias. There's negativity bias not only in news, but in music also, you know, in songs.
Yeah, I agree. I like the message, I can't go on without you. It's like, wait a minute. Yes, I can. Let me go ahead and give it a try. So, bye. Anyway, those, you know, that was the whole idea of, you know, being mindful rather than brainful, you know, and that, you know, that was, really appreciated reading the distinction that you had in your book about that. So, okay, well, let's see here. We have just a couple more minutes, and then we're going to take a short break. So I do want to invite anyone who's listening, if you would like to ask Joseph a question, you can call in to our number at 619-789-4359. Or for those of you who are listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Joseph, feel free to type it in there, and we will take that right after a short break. One of the things before we take the break, in the chapter that you had, Are You Brainful or Mindful?, you have as the application at the end of that, it was the guided meditation listening. And I found that one, it was a very interesting guided meditation because, you know, it talks about the idea of listening, but like listening to your body and not with words. So, I mean, would you mind kind of talking a little bit about the whole concept of listening, you know, what that listening guided meditation is supposed to invoke?
Sure. By the way, we're discussing Buddha's Book of Meditation that I recently wrote. Joseph Emmett is my name, and it just came out in last month, during the month of March, at the beginning of March. I think listening is really the essence of meditation because, as we all know, the brain is always talking. Like, all the thoughts we have are the brain talking. And the brain needs to be quiet in order to listen, whether you're listening to someone else. Like, you're listening to someone else, and your brain doesn't stop. It keeps trying to, what am I going to say next? Or, he's going too long, I should interrupt him right now. Oh, what a bunch of nonsense. He always does that. Your brain doesn't stop, and you can't really listen to yourself or to somebody else unless you have a quiet mind to begin with. So the first stage of Buddhist meditation, which is quieting the mind, calming the mind, sometimes called samatha, I like to call it serenity meditation, is so essential for so many things like relationships, for parenting, for even sales. Are you listening to your client? I mean, I can tell you incredible stories about when I was trying to buy a house. I would tell my requirements, and the agent would take me to a house that was completely the opposite of what I wanted. Obviously, she wasn't listening to me. So listening is a very important skill, and you cannot really get there unless your mind is quiet. And I sort of make the point that thinking is the mind talking, and meditation is the mind listening. You will find a guided meditation on this theme on my website, mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org, center spelled T-R-E, by clicking on books and then by clicking on Buddha's Book of Meditation. There are 12 meditation songs and 3 guided meditations that go with the book, but you can download them without buying the book if you really wanted to, but of course with the book you get more instructions and perspective and so on, but they're available for free. And as one of the meditations is, as Robert just mentioned, is about listening.
And that one, you know, to me it was the distinction of recognizing, you know, listening to your body, you know, that particular segment of that guided meditation.
Mm-hmm.
when you you know, and I've kind of, you know, done a little bit in that, but quite often I find myself, you know, putting words, you know, words to it, rather than recognizing the listening should be in the form of sensations that the body is providing.
Oh, yes. Well, you're listening to the body, for sure, because the body basically talks in sensations, not in words. The words come from the brain. So when people say, listen to your body, like the feeling of hunger, what does it exactly feel like? If you put words like, I must eat now, or this is terrible, those words are coming from the brain. What is the raw sensation of hunger or pain or fatigue? And it has been found in specifically, this is applications in pain management, specifically in pain, that the raw sensations of pain are not as bad as the interpretations that come from the brain, like, this is horrible, will it ever stop, is it cancer, will I always have this pain, why me, and so on and so forth. All these are messages that come from the brain. They are not part of the actual physical pain that comes from the body. And it's really an important distinction to know the difference, to know where the messages are coming from.
Yeah, very much. Now, with regard to hunger, I do know the physical sensation, but my ears also get a clear message from mine with a loud grumble. Mm-hmm. That it does. But yeah, to me, the valuable lesson that I learned from that particular meditation was, you know, the recognition of sensation as the form of communication from the body. So, okay, well, we're going to take a quick break here, Joseph. And then when we come back, I want to talk about a couple more topics from your book, and then we'll go into talking a little bit about your mindfulness meditation center and all the other additional, because you have some other additional wonderful things to offer there. So, okay, so everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in just about 2 minutes.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Hey, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, thank you to Chris and Roy for those comments. I greatly appreciate that. And back to today's show, my very special guest is Joseph Emmett. He is author of Buddha's Book of Meditation, mindfulness practices for a quieter mind, self-awareness, and healthy living. And again, you can find out more about this book as well as his other books and other services offered by visiting his website, which is www.mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org. And this center is CENTRE.org. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Well, that's we're back, Joseph.
Hello again.
Hello. Good. Okay, good. Well, one of the other, there's a couple more different topics. First of all, you have each of the 18 areas that you cover in your book, the 18 chapters, I really enjoyed reading. I mean, they were concise, very much to the point. And again, each one has an application or two. Some of them have like a practice song and a practice theme or a theme in meditation. So, I for one appreciate the ability to apply those lessons into my daily life. One of the chapters you have in your book is called Riding Dragons and Embracing Tigers. The image of those makes you wonder. I think we've kind of had a few dragons in our lives. And so would you mind kind of sharing with the listeners just a little bit about what that is about?
Well, I have a little refrigerator magnet. There is a very seductive-looking woman saying, I sometimes wrestle with my demons, but sometimes we just cuddle. And I enjoy looking at it. I get a chuckle out of it every time I look at it. But the fact is that we all have them. We all have our challenges. Whether it's some kind of anger, whether it's sadness, anxiety, we all have our challenges. And in that particular chapter, different challenges were outlined. And also, there's this beautiful, beautiful picture of from a Korean temple of sort of like the impersonation of compassion shown as a woman and riding a dragon and holding water of compassion and sprinkling it on the earth. And traditionally women have done that. They have taken care of babies, elderly people who are sick, young children. They have done that traditionally, historically. And in those days, we're talking about 20 centuries ago or something, people considered that a woman's body was harder to ride than a man's body. I never was afraid of getting pregnant. I never had a period. I never experienced menopause and so on and so forth. It was quite an image to see a woman riding a dragon, which sort of maybe symbolizes this more difficult kind of body, and still sprinkling drops of the water of compassion all over the earth. But of course, as a man, we have our own dragons. We have inherited this incredible competitiveness, this aggressiveness from our evolutionary past. I mean, you watch a football game or a hockey game. I'm in Canada, and you know, it looks like tribal warfare. You know, and at the end there. There's often someone being carried away in a stretcher, you know. And we have our own dragons as males. We have, so we're all, in a way, riding these dragons. And the picture I mentioned, this woman is riding this dragon, but she's has a smile and she's still able to sprinkle drops of compassion. So this is it. This is it, to be able to ride that dragon instead of be mastered by it. This is a challenge.
Yeah, we have one of our friends, listeners, Dennis, in the chat room, is kind of laughingly said that, you know, he knows the demons and doesn't run from them. But you know, that is one of those things where, you know, that's humanity. And I love the fact that you say that every now and then you cuddle with them. I mean, because...
yes, whoever came up with that had a good sense of humor, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And now, in part, in that particular chapter, that's one of those that you offer a couple different examples of application. One of them is the practice theme of developing a peaceful heart. You know, and you know that, and then you also have the guided meditation of directing my attention, and I believe that too is one of those that you have that's available on the website under books under the Buddha Buddha's Book of Meditation. So, so people can go look at that. Now, I will say, like you mentioned, you know, people can download them for free, but I really like having the book there, you know, because, I mean, you can have the book, you can read along with it. And then to me, it's like an extra free reinforcement, in a sense, you know, to be able to read it and hear it and speak it at all at the same time.
Yes, the book provides context and depth and tells you how to use that particular meditation or that particular song, for sure. I just wanted to make the point that they're available, they're waiting for you right there.
Yep, absolutely, and I, like I said, I was listening to him before the show again. You know, I listened to him a long time ago when I first got your book, but did that little reinforcement before the show, so I was fine to go when we started. Also, you know, one of the chapters also that I really enjoyed was your discussion of Buddha's garden. And, you know,
yes.
So that kind of stuck out for me. So would you mind kind of sharing a little bit about the idea of having a Buddha's garden and also how Kuan Yin also fits into the picture?
Well, a lot of people will look at the Buddha image, you know, on the internet, in a book, whatever, not have a clear idea of what is the Buddha doing in this picture. Well, he is cultivating his garden of his heart, the garden of his mind. He's cultivating it. Just like you might cultivate the garden, your flower garden in your backyard, or your vegetable garden in your backyard. When you cultivate a garden, you lovingly encourage the plants that bring you nourishment, and you discourage, you know, thorns, poison ivy, crabgrass, whatever. And that is cultivating a garden. And the Buddha is doing that in all his images. Positive thoughts, peace, love, serenity, joy, gratitude, acceptance, contentment. Think of these as flowers, as plants, as violets, as irises, or as tomato plants, whatever. He's cultivating these plants by watering them. And by watering them, they grow bigger. And what is the equivalent of watering? Watering, of course, is metaphorical here. What is the real equivalent? The equivalent is bringing those thoughts, states of mind, to your mind by repeating them. There is a well-known practice: as you go to bed, think of the five good things that happened to you, or five reasons why you're grateful. Every night, think of this. This has been documented by positive psychologists in study after study. It changes your mind. It changes your mental world. And it's a wonderful, wonderful positivity exercise. So as you bring those good things to mind, you're watering the seeds of gratitude, the seeds of positivity. And that's what the Buddha is doing, sitting there. He's been doing that for 26 centuries. He's been watering the seeds of happiness, of positivity. And as you do that, as you water the seeds of positive thoughts in your own heart, by some incredible magic, you also water them in the world. Because if you're a teacher, let's say, and you have wonderful, joyful, happy personality, which you have been cultivating, your students absorb that. Your clients absorb that. Your work group absorbs that. Your family, your children absorb that. So there is no absolute line, a wall between your own feelings, your own heart, the positivity in your own heart, and the positivity in the world. And that's what the Buddha has been doing for 26 centuries. He's been creating positivity in the world by creating positivity inside, even though he's no longer alive in a real physical sense.
Yeah. This is so interesting, because when I read that that particular section, you know, you talk about the flowers, and you know, mm-hmm. how you know it, you know, encapsulates earth, air, and water. And what your description a few moments ago, you said irises. Now, just as a matter of fact, this morning while I was on my walk, I actually came across, now the irises in our area, the purple ones, have been blooming for a good couple of weeks. And, you know, so I've taken photos and shared them, and it's really, but this morning I found some absolutely stunning white and yellow irises with some of the blue, purple ones in the background. So I snapped that picture, shared that with my friends, and that one on Instagram, that one has gotten like worldwide. I mean, within minutes, you know, people kind of resonated with that. I mean, it was just like boom, boom, boom. Oh, you know, and I thought, you know, who are these people that are saying that they like this picture? And they were from all over. And I just, that kind of just made me smile that there was something in that that touched, you know, that sparked, you know, this something in the people who saw it.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And of all flowers, for you to mention irises, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, Joseph isn't. I'm in sync with Joseph, or I whatever. But there's some kind of synchronicity going on that's enjoyable. So
I'm so glad that you share some of my cherished feelings about these things. And you know, what I just mentioned a little while ago, before you go to bed, think of five wonderful things that happened today. You know, what some of us do, and automatically, is they think of the five bad things that happened today. You know, this is automatic thinking.
Yeah.
It comes over you. And then you're watering the seeds of poison ivy and crabgrass and thorns. So, and this is where intentional thinking comes in. This is intentionally paying attention. This is how I define mindfulness right at the beginning. You can change that. You don't have to think of the five bad things that happened to you. Think of the five good things that happened to you. You can do that. You know, we can all do that. So this is the relationship between mindfulness and positivity, mindfulness and happiness, and this is what really grabs me.
Yeah. Well, you know, just like, you know, remembering those before, you know, at the nighttime before going to bed, that's what my focus is, you know, because I try to set like a positive intention before going to sleep, you know, because I strongly believe in the power of the dream state, you know, and so quite often I mean, there are things I will not watch on television before I go to bed, you know. None of the scary blood and guts negativity stuff, you know, that's just not, I don't do that, you know, because I know that it can carry over, and I really that's 8 hours that I want to be productive, even though I'm sleeping. I think that can be a very productive time for me. So, but anyway, that's, you know, and so thinking of those positive things, it really does kind of set the stage for that as well. Well, gosh, Joseph, we're down to about the last 10 minutes. So I want to talk just a few minutes, if we can, about your Mindfulness Meditation Center. Again, everyone, there is a link to Joseph's website in the show page description, and center is C-E-N-T-R-E. Those Canadians like to spell it that way. like most of the world. So, but would you mind talking a little bit about your center and, you know, what it is that you offer and you know, what people can find there?
Well, I started this because I found the mindfulness meditation so beneficial for myself. I was at first offering open sessions, like drop-in sessions. You would just come in. And for many years, 10 years or whatever, this is what I did. And once or twice a week, and Saturday sessions had a certain theme. And then about 10 years ago, I started offering focused groups. What people had to sign up for. I find that having sort of like a goal in mind and knowing why you're going for meditation is a great help. I also offer mindfulness meditation at a hospital here for cancer patients. And those people really know why they're coming. And I offer courses for overcoming stress. And once again, those people are motivated to come. They know why they are there. And that is so important because I found sometimes with open meditation classes, the meditation, and there again, I go back to your website and to your bringing inspiration to earth. So this is for me part of bringing meditation to earth, connecting it to a purpose, connecting it, and as your motivation becomes stronger, then you tend to practice, you tend to actually do it, you know. So I've been enjoying this second phase of my activities with the Mindfulness Meditation Center.
Well, great. Well, now, in addition to Buddha's Book of Meditation, which is what we've been talking about the show, you also offer Buddha's Book of Stress Reduction and Book of Sleep. I know many people could use the Book of Sleep. You know, it seems like a lot of my friends have interrupted sleep patterns that are driving them crazy.
Yes. Those three books, they were published by Tarcher Penguin. It started with the Buddha's Book of Sleep, Sleep Better in 7 Weeks. And so in putting down 7 weeks, I wasn't making any quick promises. I wanted to underline that there was some practice needed. Yeah, these are all applications, applied mindfulness, mindfulness applied to the usual challenges we have, sleep, better sleep, stress reduction. And this last book is sort of like a primer on meditation in general, Buddha's Book of Meditation.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, we have only a few more minutes, so are there maybe any final words that you would like to leave our listeners with, Joseph?
Yes, I could mention that. The thrust of Buddhist meditation is really toward finding happiness. And the thrust is recognizing the challenges we have, but not getting stuck in them. Going toward happiness, and the practices are important, mindfulness practices, because they allow you to, they sort of show you the way. And so this book is different from a lot of other books because every chapter, as you noted, has a practice section. It's either a meditation or a song, and the song is very simple, and it asks you to learn the song and hum along and sing it to yourself and put it on your phone or whatever and refer back to it and take a meditation break. It's really has a different purpose than a coffee break. A meditation break, just a few minutes during the day, take a walk, put on your phone, listen to one of the songs. Song is 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Take a deep breath. Come back to whatever you're doing, whether at home, at work. You will find that your mental world has changed. You're refreshed. Because like our days, like it's one thing after another. It's like you're walking on a country road and there's a puddle. And you jump over the puddle. And you sort of psych yourself up and a little bit of extra effort. But after the puddle is over, do you come back to the original state of relaxation, or there's a little bit of stress left over from the effort of the puddle? And our day is like a country road full of puddles. And if you take a little break now and then and drain the extra stress, then it doesn't accumulate, and your day goes so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, personally, I don't mind jumping over puddles, but every now and then a good splash in a puddle is really good, too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Joseph, thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I really do enjoy your book. I'll be sure to put it on my recommended reading list on my webpage. So I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today.
It has been a pleasure, Robert. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Joseph Emmett. He is author of Buddha's Book of Meditation, Mindfulness Practices for a Quieter Mind, Self-Awareness, and Healthy Living. And again, you can find out more about this book as well as his other books and services by visiting his website, which is www.mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org. And again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description. And like Joseph mentioned, go to his website, click on books, click on the Buddha's Book of Meditation, and he has some free downloads there of guided meditations as well as songs. Check them out. You'll really enjoy it. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's B-I-T-E radio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.